providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back. We are wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report with a focus on the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also publishes the Eye on Energy Report, which is a free letter that covers more of the macro data around the oil and natural gas sector. Joseph, let's start with kind of the macro landscape focused in oil. Oil price has pretty much been stuck in a range this whole year, $65 on the low end up to about $80, even more so in the last couple months, 2 months to be exact, more in that $65 to $75 range. Joseph, in your eyes, what's some of the key data that investors need to look for to understand if we're going to get a breakdown from this range or a breakout higher?
Well, the issue for me is that in the 2022 period, supplies were in excess of demand. I put that a chart on that in my last SER issue. You can go to the EIA website and see that. Federal Reserve of Dallas does some great charts. And there was a build in inventories. Oil doesn't go up when there's build in inventories. And that occurred during the time of the Russian invasion. As America took from the SPR, other countries took from the strategic reserves because they were worried about not wanting to buy from Russia. And that they did make that at work. Then heading into early 2023, the government is still putting out the SPR. This week, the SPR that came out today was down 1.4 million barrels from 350 million to 348.6. And that's down 149 million barrels from 297.9 a year ago. So there's a big shakeout, from the how long will the SPR continue to add to supplies to keep oil prices cheap? But we're in the summer driving season now. Demand historically picks up. We're going to see motor gasoline demand pick up in the next few weeks. We're going to see jet fuel pick up to record levels. Last week it was up 108,000 to 1.94 million barrels, and that's up significantly from a year ago, 10% from a year ago. And what it's going on, as we all know, when you hear about people flying, there's the planes, they don't have enough pilots, don't have enough slots, the air traffic control can't handle it. So you're looking at very, very tight conditions for flying. And so people are going to go by car. Gasoline prices are cheaper than they were a year ago. And people have been locked at home, so they want to travel. So all of that demand, I think, is positive. The one that the markets have been hoping for is a big recovery in China, and that alone would mean a million barrels of more demand. So far, we're not seeing that. Where we're seeing the demand pick up is in other Asia countries. We're seeing it in the United States, and I think we're going to see it as the weather gets warmer. More and more natural gas is going to be consumed for creating electricity. You've already heard the Texas at brownouts, and they're worried between 4 and 8 o'clock in the evening that people will have to be careful with the amount of usage because they're running flat out. They do have a lot of solar power there. They're after California, I think they have the most solar capacity in the United States. They also have some wind power, so they are moving to renewables. But the biggest portion, over 50%, I believe is the number, is still coming from natural gas to for cogen to create electricity for air conditioning. So right now we're looking at record temperatures. I think they were saying July 4th, I think I saw this on CNN, was the highest temperature day ever.
Well, Joseph, when you look at the energy landscape, to Corey's point, it's kind of been channeling sideways. Nat gas has had a pretty tough time of it, but some people are starting to look at that as a contrarian area. What do you think is going to bring a little more interest into the sector as far as new buying? What would cause the price to break out? Because right now, when we talk with oil investors or even some of the people in the industry, they're kind of just in a sideways summer doldrums period. What do you think the catalyst would be that's going to cause oil to either break out or break down?
Okay, one thing people have to take into account is The LNG plants just went through a major turnaround. They have annual turnarounds. So you had 2 to 4 BCF less of demand. I wrote about that today in Ion Energy. And so that plus, you know, the storage being high has kept prices low. But once we start seeing the LNG demand come back on, and the shipments may not be to Europe because Europe's in good shape, but the shipments may end up going to Asia, to South Korea, Japan, other places, Vietnam, and that would tighten things up. The other thing, of course, is demand, you know, it will exceed supply once the LNG comes on. And if we have hot weather and people really put on their air conditioning units, that's going to help. And then lastly, a negative in terms of, you know, the environment and in terms of people's lives is tornadoes and hurricanes. If you have those, that the, you know, especially hurricanes, the whole Gulf of Mexico shuts in, and that could be 10 BCF for periods of time. So people are not looking at the positive side of the coin. They're looking at the storage numbers, which are bearish at this point. They're still quite high, but they're not as high as they were year over year just a few weeks ago. Those numbers are tightening up. And if we do start seeing the LNG demand come back up, you're going to see storage injections not go up as quickly as people think. And that could change the psychology all by itself.
What about China? Joseph, is China playing any role in kind of this muted energy price simply because their post-COVID recovery has been a lot slower, a lot weaker than expected?
Yeah, there's two portions to that. One, China's talking about doing some massive stimulus. Everybody's waiting to see what that is because I don't know. They don't need bridges to nowhere or you know, housing units or office towers empty, you know, especially with the work from home gig. So I don't know exactly what they could do to stimulate. Lowering interest rates, I don't think is going to do it. And the China numbers, consumer spending is not very, hasn't recovered because people still have the COVID mentality. The savings rates they have are unbelievable. There's over $2 trillion of savings from the start of COVID to now. So they could go on a massive spending spree if they saw optimism about the economy. So I wouldn't count them out. China historically has found ways to stimulate the economy. I don't think that we need more airports and railroads and, you know, empty cities, but maybe they should do hospitals. Maybe they should do, you know, providing more support for senior citizens. There's ways of doing stimulus that they haven't done, which is part of the social service basket we have in Canada, the States, and Europe. And the Chinese have much, much lower spending in those areas.
One other question on the macro drivers is obviously the big 800-pound gorilla in the room, OPEC. And there's been some noise out and chatter out lately, Joseph, that possibly OPEC isn't, you know, its future is not as certain as many people thought it would be. There's some countries they're trying to lure into OPEC. There's other countries that have left, like they were, UAE was considering leaving OPEC, very similar to like what we saw with Indonesia leaving in the mid-2000s. But there's also countries they're trying to bring into OPEC. What's your take on their role as a price setter or, you know, the biggest swing trader in the markets?
Well, countries that are in OPEC that can't meet their quotas are trying to raise production. So, for example, in the June report that came out 2 weeks ago, Angola raised production by 54,000. Iran raised it by 61,000. Iraq by 22,000. But then Saudi Arabia had said they were planning to cut by 500,000, and in total they were working to get a cut of 1 million barrels. Saudi Arabia alone cut 519,000 barrels in the month of May, and UAE cut 140,000 barrels a day. So, and then if you got 95 from Kuwait, so those are the big decliners. And if there's a new game plan to cut 1 million barrels, starting in August 1st. Number one, you know, OPEC has thrown numbers out before that they were going to cut. They've never cut fully the amount they've talked about. But if Russia finally realizes that they've satiated the storage levels in India and China by selling cheap oil, sub-US 60 for their Urals oil, they may decide, you know, do we really want them to buy more oil and put it into storage, or do we want them to start consuming and then hopefully get closer to 60? And they're also selling oil to, or products to Saudi Arabia, so Saudi Arabia can sell oil at 75, and they're buying $58 diesel and jet fuel and propane and others. So Russia is selling produced product to keep their revenues up, and the buyers are just saying, "Hey, they're giving us a bargain," and then in some cases they're even reselling it to the U.S., EU, and other countries. I have a chart on that in the newest issue of the SPR or the SER that's coming out next Thursday. The cutoff is today. So there's an interesting chart there showing how Russia is selling direct oil and also selling product and who the buyers are.
All right, let's move into the stocks then, because broadly in kind of a flat price environment, I've noticed stocks kind of just fading slowly, but surely they are mostly trending down from what I've seen. Have you noticed any outliers in terms of a sector or a group that's doing worse or that's holding up better?
Well, the drillers and the frackers have been hit pretty hard. Oil stocks today, because of the the report, are getting hit. Some of them are down 4% today that are oily names. Precision Drilling's down 4.8% today. You've got I'm just going to go through my list here. You've got Yangara down 6.3%. So when you have these smaller names with not so much liquidity, and having used up their NCIBs, because you're only allowed to buy a certain amount every day. You have a maximum you can buy every day and a maximum you can buy during the period that you have it. And right now we're in blackout periods for many of them because the quarter is over. And until they release their Q2 results, they may be blackout where they can't do any NCIBs. And that's why you're seeing stocks weaken more than the averages. I think that if we go back to $66, $67 WTI in the next few weeks on shitty markets, and the Dow down, today was down over 500 points. Now it looks like it's only down 300. But if we go down below 30,000, which is a 10% hiccup from here, and the worst hit sector will probably be tech, because that's the most overvalued sector. I think at that point we're going to get bargains. I think that could happen as early as late July. If not, it'll be into sometime in August. I expect we'll be sending out. Right now we had, if you remember in early March when we were cautious, we only had 8 names on the buy list. We added 7 on March 13th and 7 on March 15th because we got 2 buy signals in a row. I think we're going to get a lot of 1 or 2 buy signals late July, August, and I expect we'll add another 8 names right now from what I'm looking at on the prices. So we could have 30 of our 39 names as buys, and that's the highest amount of buys I've had since you and I've been talking.
Well, Joseph, I know you have a diversified portfolio, but for somebody that's listening to this and maybe they've got some money on the sideline, sounds like we're going to be setting up for a good buy zone in a lot of companies. Are you more animated by the bigger oil companies that pay a dividend, the smaller growth-oriented companies that could maybe have a little more torque to the upside if we saw the prices improve? Are you more interested in nat gas versus oil? Any thoughts on which one really sticks out in your mind as far as the best opportunity?
Again, for individuals, you need to sit down with your investment advisor and decide what's appropriate. For our age, we want some dividend income, but we also want growth. So we own things like Birch Cliff, and we own Pine Cliff, Pipestone. We're looking at buying some of the oily names. We see bargains there. Some of the energy service stocks are really cheap. We've been backers of CREW for a long time and Gran Tierra. And so you need to, you could be buying Paramount Resources with a great dividend. The other thing is some of the utilities are pipeline infrastructure utilities are yielding great. Just to go over the yield page I have in front of me now, Birch Cliff is yielding 10.8%. Enbridge 7.4, TC Energy 7.2, you've got Canacol at 9.6, Pine Cliff at 9.6. You've got Hemisphere 8.3, which is a smaller one. In-play oil 7.8%. Surge Energy is trading with a 7.1. So you can get some very, very handsome yields and have significant capital gain potential. My view would be is the Enbridge's TCs would give you a 7% yield with 10-15% upside. And for people who want growth, you could buy some of these juniors yielding 6-7% and have 20-30% or more upside into 2024. And the reason is I think in 2024, we're going to see $100 oil again. That could be because of the supply demand. It could be because of issues with China, blockading Taiwan. It could be problems with the shipping in the Gulf of Suez. We've seen Iran recently try to grab a couple of tankers and the American Navy saved them. So there's lots of hot spots out there. And if we do see something happening there, that would increase the price of oil. And with supply and demand tightened and with less drilling occurring, that just adds to the positive story for 2020, late 23, early 24.
All right. So then, Joseph, I guess from the junior standpoint, I want to ask you about some of these junior companies. When you're looking at some of the drillers, the juniors out there, we talk a lot about kind of the resource mining world and how tough it has been for these juniors, especially to raise money to get work done. What are some of the keys to isolate in terms of characteristics of these juniors that in your eyes makes them a bit healthier than the broad swath of juniors?
Yeah, I would look at companies that have strong balance sheets, that have a break even to pay the dividend in the $40 WTI range so that they don't cut the dividends. They may pull back on their NCIBs, to pay the dividend. And what you want to do is be involved in the Montney play. You want to be involved in the drillers to some extent, because if we have 2, 3, 4 LNG projects on the West Coast over the next few years being moved into, moved on in terms of progressing to build them, there's going to have to be a lot of drilling in Northwest Alberta, Northeast BC to bring on the gas to feed those facilities. So I really like natural gas. I like the drillers and the frackers. And I like international oils. Domestic oils are okay, especially an in-play that has a great yield. But I like the international oil and gas because those companies can grow much faster because the size of the prizes historically are bigger. So we're adding next week 2 new companies to our list from 37 to 39. And both of them are international drillers. One's a U.S. company with operations based in Calgary. The other one is an Asian company with the operations based in Calgary. And that's the key for me is I want access to management. So if they have offices in Canada and you can or in Calgary, you can easily make a phone call and get a meeting or a Teams meeting or whatever. And that's really the key. If I have access to management and they're doing exciting things and I'm willing to cover the story and own the story if it's the right story.
Well, Joseph, just talking about drillers and oil services, we were talking a little bit before this call that it looks like many of the pipeline companies, as you alluded to earlier, are set up pretty well. But when you look at a lot of the drilling, especially U.S. drilling, more so than Canadian, it seems like there's a reduction in drilling across the board. What does that mean for the sector? Are we at peak Permian Basin, for example? Are some of the other basins just getting long in the tooth? If there's less drilling going on, what does that mean for that part of the sector?
For the near term, I agree with you. It's bearish because the industry is being pushed by investors to spend capital wisely and to return capital to investors through NCIBs and dividends. You look at Warren Buffett keeps on buying more Oxy, and he's a big investor in Chevron. So he's making the bet that the return on capital thesis will come. The industry will not spend a lot of money to grow. It's not being paid to do that under the Biden administration. So I think that that just sets up for a fabulous story, because if we, you know, if we have demand growth from natural gas, from LNG exports in Canada and the States, that helps, you know, remember, we're producing 16 BCF of gas in Canada. Those new facilities could be 5 to 7 BCF of gas by the end of the decade. That's a pretty fabulous growth rate. You don't have the same growth rate for liquids. So I like the Montney plays and have investments there. And we cover those companies and we like them a lot. And we like the service sector that's going to benefit from the Montney drilling. And then we like the international E&P story. So, you know, there's cheap stocks everywhere. Domestic oily names are cheap too. You know, Crescent Point has a, you know, well, it's not as juicy, 4.8% yield. And, the issue is, you know, like Whitecap's got 6.5% yield. So they're juicy, but not as juicy as some of the others.
All right, Joseph, we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for this update. Again, broadly, the energy sector, oil, natural gas has moved kind of sideways. The stocks have drifted a little bit. But by the end of the year, you are seeing a better outlook. We'll see how that all plays out. We'll follow along kind of month after month as we do with you. So, Joseph, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. And everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. We appreciate you taking some of your weekend to listen to these interviews. And as always, keep in touch with us through email. We love hearing from each and every one of you, your thoughts on the markets, our guests, and any companies we interview. So, everybody, thanks again for tuning in. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.